This is the song we roll out sometimes when we talk about fashion. But we don't usually talk just about men's fashion. We shall today, though, with Derek Guy, the menswear guy online, whose opinions seem to have conquered social media in recent years. I've always liked the bloke who says black tie. Derek Guy is mostly known as Menswear Guy on X/Twitter. He's a Canadian fashion industry writer and commentator. He became famous online anyway when Elon Musk took over Twitter and when the site's algorithmically curated For You tab promoted his account, Dye Workwear, to a large audience, none of which I especially comprehend. Derek already had a steady sort of audience for his fashion writing in the Washington Post, Esquire, and the Financial Times. Now it's a lot bigger. Hello.
Hello. Thank you for having me on.
You're interesting because you're an intellectual who finds fashion engrossing. That's my summation.
Well, that's very kind. I don't know if I would call myself an intellectual, but I do think that clothes are more interesting than many people make them out to be, but perhaps less important than some fashion people make it to be.
That's nicely put. You're Canadian, but the son of refugees.
I am, yes, that's true.
Born in Vancouver, but I think you've got one parent from China and one from Vietnam, is that right?
No, both my parents are from Vietnam. They escaped Saigon after the Tet Offensive and, made their way out of Southeast Asia and then landed in Iran for a while. And then the Iranian Revolution happened and eventually landed as refugees in North America and immigrated to the United States. Sometimes I think about when they were my age, what they had gone through and what they accomplished. And I feel sometimes a bit guilty for, complaining about. I was in the supermarket the other day and I couldn't tell the difference between a zucchini and a cucumber. And I was thinking, my parents escaped a war at my age. And I'm trying to figure out if this is a zucchini or a cucumber. But yeah, I have great love and respect for them.
Yes, I can imagine that going through your head or our heads if we were in the same position. How did you enter the fashion frame then? What got you hooked in this area?
Well, I was interested in clothes a little bit when I was young. And so around the early 2000s, I started becoming a lot more interested in tailoring, and over time got hooked onto menswear blogs and menswear forums, and spent much of the kind of like mid 2000s on forward on menswear forums and blogs. And I was on Twitter since 2011, and I don't know, somehow in the last year and a half or so, my account has kind of blown up, which has. This surprises me just as much as anyone else.
Are you fashionable? What we would call fashionable? Are you a fashion plate or just a fashion nerd, as it were?
I am often more interested in clothing as social language and history than I am in capital F fashion. You know, a year or so ago, I was talking to an editor at the Washington Post, and I said that I admittedly don't read very many fashion articles. And even as someone who's interested in, let's say, clothing, sometimes I wonder who reads these fashion articles because they're always about a creative director who got appointed, you know, here or there or the hot new trend. Someone recently sent me an article. I admit, you know, they wanted me to comment on this article about cardigans, and they're talking about how cardigans are no longer this like thing that your dad wore and they've been updated and here's like the new thing that you're supposed to wear. And none of that is interesting to me. I just find it so removed from my life. But I care a lot about clothing and I find it very interesting. And the way that I find it interesting is that I think clothing is so inextricable from how we tell stories about human culture and society. So, you know, if you talk about, like, let's say, the feminist revolution, you're going to talk about women putting on pants. If you talk about the rise of the Second British Empire, you're going to talk about how the suit essentially replaced all of this cultural dress native to, you know, different kind of countries. If you talk about the close of the 20th century and the rise of youth subcultures, you're going to talk about how punks dressed and how kids that were into hip hop and graffiti dressed and all of these things. So clothing to me is tied into how we think about society and culture. It's tied into economics and politics. And to me, that story is a lot more interesting than what some creative director did or where they've been assigned or what, you know, five trendy New Yorkers are wearing. I just think the social history element and the social language of clothing is much more interesting than the fashion part of it.
In terms of the larger social language or the language of clothing, which lies behind cultural emergences of whatever sort, clothes maketh the man. I mean, that's actually a saying that goes back to Roman times, not just to Shakespeare. Do you believe that?
No. On Twitter, people imbue clothing with more importance than I think it has. So I very much believe that you should not read a person's intelligence or character or morality, their income or whatever else, whatever kind of inner trait that you think it means. I don't think you should read that off of their clothing. But it is true that people do judge us based on our clothing, whether we like it or not. You can't opt out of that, unfortunately.
We certainly do make those inferences, though. You're quite right. It's instant and it's kind of, they arrive unbidden in our minds. I'll ask you a few specifics as we talk about the general as well. We're in autumn over here, Derek. You say for men that wearing a big overcoat is the single easiest way to look good at this time of year, a polo coat. And I noticed I didn't even know what that was, and I looked them up and we sell plenty of them. Why a big coat?
It doesn't have to be a polo coat, but essentially some kind of big overcoat is very useful. One, just for protection, right? I mean, in the colder months, it keeps you warm, keeps the wind off your back. But in terms of style, an overcoat lends many of the advantages of tailored clothing, but very little of the pretense. One of the nice things about tailored clothing is that it's not built like a lot of casual wear. Inside of a suit jacket or sport coat, if you were to rip it open, you'll find layers of canvas, what's called hair cloth, which is kind of like harder, stiffer material across that's used across the chest. You'll find complicated stitching techniques like pad stitching, which turn two-dimensional fabric into three-dimensional shapes. You'll find shoulder padding sometimes. All of these things allow a suit jacket or sport coat to give you a distinctive silhouette that you cannot achieve in casual wear. If you just put on a trucker jacket, or if you look inside of a trucker jacket, there's nothing. It's just the denim shell. This doesn't mean that casual wear can't have a distinctive silhouette, but it cannot give you the silhouette that tailoring gives. The one exception is what would be called like a dress overcoat, which is the kind of overcoat that a man would have worn in most of the 20th century before casual wear took over. It's the kind of overcoat that you'd see in a store that specializes in suits. And the reason why those are really nice is because they are often built the same way. They have the same structure. They have the same canvas. They often have a chest piece. Depending on how they've been cut and made, sometimes they have a bit of shoulder padding. So you get the flattering effects of tailored clothing, but you're not wearing a suit. Of course, this doesn't help very much once you're indoors because you're going to take off the overcoat. But, you know, some guys are very uncomfortable with wearing a suit or a sport coat. It doesn't fit with their lifestyle. And an overcoat is to get some of that effect while also protecting yourself from the cold and wind. And just in terms of visual real estate, it takes up a lot of your body. So, you know, you can wear anything from sweatshirt and jeans and have an overcoat. You could wear a Shetland sweater and gray flannel trousers. You can wear, you know, you could wear a fisherman sweater and chinos. But the overcoat takes up so much kind of visual real estate that it almost doesn't matter what you have underneath because you have a great coat on.
Makes entire sense, except maybe if you're still wearing your pajamas. No, I understand. With less structure, I mean, I've got limited fashion sense, and left to my own devices, it would be none. But I've instinctively rebelled against the big puffer jackets, for instance, because of their bulk. Although people love them, I know. What do you think of that trend, can I ask?
Yeah, you know, someone wrote a story about puffer jackets, and I think they turned to me expecting me to be against them. And I'm not. If you put on a puffer jacket, certain types of puffer jackets, and you wear them with, let's say, a pair of work boots, that's like a classic outdoorsy look. I do think that there are some puffer jackets that are just so... Many of the modern ones, to me, lack that story and that history and that social language. And they've sacrificed all of that in favor of these, I guess, technical features that I think most people don't really need in their life. I mean, they're just like, you know, they're so overbuilt for the environment and the lifestyle of the average office worker, essentially. Some of those, I think, don't look good in the ways that people wear them with business casual. But there are a lot of classic kind of puffer jackets or down jackets that do look good with the right, you know, the right clothes and the right lifestyle and the right environment.
So when we see someone in a puffer jacket, those modern ones that you mentioned, which you don't like quite as much, we instinctively look at the person and think, you don't belong in that jacket. That's what we do.
Yeah. You mean that sometimes it doesn't look like it fits the person? Is that what you mean in terms of like the personality? Yeah. I mean, that's the double-edged sword of fashion or clothing, whatever you want to call it, is that it's both a tool for us to express our identity, but also explore our identity. And if you're the kind of guy that is used to just wearing chinos and button-up shirts, and you live an average kind of middle-class lifestyle, some of the stories of your actual lived experience may not be that exciting, to be honest. So you might spend some time exploring other elements of your personality, or either real or imagined, or that you aspire to develop. And you might find some kind of, you know, you might use clothes to develop an idea of yourself as either rugged or, I don't know, sophisticated or polished or whatever, or learned or whatever it is that you want to express about yourself. And a lot of clothing for a time may feel a little bit like dress up. And I think that's fine. I mean, essentially clothing, as long as we don't put too much importance on it, as long as we don't exclude people from jobs and, you know, public places and all of these things over such a silly thing, then I think it's fine. If sometimes, you know, you might put on something and you might look or feel silly in it. You wear it for a while and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. It takes a while to find that uniform that feels like, quote unquote, you.
Yeah. You have a very interesting way of looking at this. Derek Guy is talking to us. I'm slowly getting to the suits. Is the suit itself dying?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. The suit exists in this strange space because it's the most traditional form of what we have left of Western dress. And like any kind of traditional form of dress, like the kimono or, you know, anything that you find in any other kind of society, people use it for very formal ceremonial events, so funerals, weddings. At the moment, really, one of the few holdouts is just government newscasting and suit clothiers themselves. But even in banking and law, it's quickly disappearing.
Do we need to have any of our trousers with sharp creases in them in this day and age, whether they're suit trousers or just reasonably, you know, good wear other trousers? What about creases in the modern era? Have they disappeared too or not?
Well, the crease is a way to make a suit look, or any kind of tailored outfit. It doesn't have to be a suit. It could just be a sport coat with tailored trousers. But the crease is a way to make the silhouette a little bit sharper and the outfit look just a little bit sharper. And I don't know if I'd call it more formal, but a little more put together. Not all fabrics crease well. So if you have a very heavy woolen flannel, that you might get one crease out of that and then it'll fall out by the second wear. Whereas some fabrics, like a hard worsted, will keep a crease for a very long time. I like them on many types of trousers. Again, you know, on some kind of thick fabrics, like even like corduroy, for example, you're not going to get a very hard crease out of corduroy. You know, some casual fabrics don't look right with a crease. Some formal fabrics look right with a crease. If you're into tailoring as an aesthetic and you like how it looks, I think it can be a nice thing. And an easy way to wear tailored clothing, if you don't work in an environment that calls for tailored clothing, is to go out to nice bars and restaurants. And, you know, you could do that once a week, once a month. And if you have a nice suit or a nice sport coat with a pair of creased trousers, I think it just makes the dining experience, even if no one else at the restaurant is dressed up, I think it makes the dining experience feel nicer. I often think that where I live, you know, a plate of spaghetti can get to be like $25 where I live, which for me, you know, it's not a burdensome expense, but it's more than, you know, what I'd normally pay for lunch. And I just think if I'm paying $25 for spaghetti or like a hamburger, I don't want to wear the same clothes that I wore on the couch. I want to wear something a little bit nicer and make the most out of that $25. There's a difference between eating something in a nice environment and feeling a little bit more dressed up versus taking the food in a carton and eating it on the sidewalk, you know, in what you wore on the couch. And I think you get a little bit more out of your $25 that way.
Yeah, I think that's a good argument. Just a couple of quick questions before we continue. Do you have rules for shoes with suits, like brown shoes with a dark suit? What do you think?
Yeah, so the easiest way to think about this is that the center of attention for a tailored outfit is the V-shaped section formed by your jacket, shirt, and tie. And this ideally should lead the viewer's eye upwards towards your face. It's for this reason why if you're wearing a suit or sport coat, and if you want to create a classic look, you should wear shoes that do not drag the eye downwards. So with a navy suit, you can wear mid-brown, dark brown, or black shoes. With a gray suit, you can wear, you know, dark brown or black shoes. You don't want to wear things like tan shoes with a navy suit because, one, it's just a bright spot of color that will drag the eye downward. And it's an unusual choice. People are not used to kind of seeing that. So the unusual effect of it will also drag the eye downwards. And when you think of how to create a good tailored outfit, it's best to think of that V-shaped section, again, formed by your jacket, shirt, and tie, and putting the attention there. If you don't wear a tie, of course, that's fine. But then you just have to figure out other ways to, you know, maybe you wear, you can wear a striped shirt to take up the visual space that an empty white shirt, you know, would be. You could wear a slightly more casual chambray shirt. You could wear a turtleneck. You could wear anything. But as long as you keep that in mind, that the upper half of the body should be the focus, that should guide your footwear choices. And it's sort of the same idea with very, very casual footwear. Sometimes guys ask me, can I wear sneakers with a suit? You can if the suit is very, very casual. So if you're wearing a tan cotton suit and you're wearing all white plain sneakers, then that will look a lot more coherent than if you're wearing a navy pinstripe suit and then white sneakers, because then all of a sudden the white sneakers is just so incoherent in terms of formality with the suit that they again drag your eye downwards.
Derek Guy is with us, Menswear Guy on X, Twitter. Can everybody wear a suit like that? I mean, wear it comfortably. I mean, Daniel Craig can put a suit on and chase someone up a crane and leap across tall buildings, but most of us can't do that. Do men without much weight on, to be honest, suits best? Slim men.
Do you mean can men that are not slim wear suits, or...?
What I mean is, do men who are slim rather than overweight look better in suits?
I don't think so. If you are a heavier guy, if you're a very slim guy or whatever it is, you just have to find the company that can solve your own fit challenges. And everybody, regardless of their body type, has fit challenges. many people will find that they have that their right shoulder is lower than their left. People will have one leg higher than the other. Some people will be bow-legged, you know, whatever it is. Everyone has certain fit challenges, and you just have to identify those and figure out how to solve them. And sometimes that can be solved through ready to wear some alterations, and sometimes it has to be solved through custom tailoring. But that's going to be a different solution and process for every guy. I think a heavy set guy in a well-tailored suit looks better than a slim guy, let's say, in a badly tailored suit. To me, it's just about the quality of the tailoring. It's not about the person's body.
Okay, and that's comforting news that everybody who tries on clothes has issues of some sort. Just a couple of quick questions. With button-down shirts, the shirts with the collar pinned to the body of the shirt with tiny buttons, do you keep the buttons fastened or not?
You do. You should. You know, it's not a crime if you don't, but you should. The design was originally, it came from polo players who wanted some way, supposedly, this as the story goes, polo players used to have buttons on their shirts so they could stop the collars from flapping up and hitting them in the face while they were riding a horse. The nice thing about a button-down collar shirt is that if you don't wear a tie, it's a way to make the collar stand up without the collar leaf slipping under your lapels. You know, if you don't button it, I don't think it's a terrible thing, but if you don't button it, you won't get that kind of roll on the collar that almost looks like angel wings. I would button it if you can.
Okay. There'll be many people listening across the gender range, you know, who don't care about fashion much. And in a way, that is true of you. I mean, you don't care about transient fashion much, I get the impression. And you want us to cherish more the clothes that we get too easily bored with, Derek?
Yeah, sometimes someone will reach out to me about a story that they're writing about sustainability in fashion. And my go-to answer is that I think too many people think about sustainability in fashion in terms of how it was produced. You know, like what are the fibers and the production processes and, you know, whatever kind of like marketing gimmick a company does. Some of them are real. I'm not discounting it. But to me, the most important element of sustainability in fashion, which is something that we should all care about because we all live on the same planet with, you know, this environment, is finding clothes that are useful to you and you will enjoy wearing. And that kind of comes with paying a little bit of attention of how certain clothes make you feel and whether or not they fit your identity and what you're communicating and how they fit your lifestyle. If you buy something and you wear it for a very long time, even if it's, you know, even if it's a stretch blend, if you wear that forever and you wear it until it's tatters, that to me is more sustainable than someone who bought a pure cotton shirt and they decide the design is no longer for them and they toss it after a season. Nowadays, there are so many clothes and so many designs that to me, the design is more likely to wear out before the seams. People get bored with clothes. They figure something doesn't flatter them or looks good on them or doesn't communicate what they want or whatever it is, and they end up tossing it. And I think that's a shame because I think many people think that when they donate these clothes to a charity shop, for example, they imagine that it lands in needy hands. But what actually often happens is that most of our clothes either get incinerated or they land up in landfills or rag markets in kind of economically depressed countries that it ends up suppressing their own clothing production markets. So in Africa, for example, they have these rag markets where Western countries like the United States dump a lot of their used clothes. And since the clothes there are so cheap, domestic producers can't compete with these rag markets. So I think to prevent all of that, it's good to think about whether or not you connect with the clothes that you buy and wear. To me, there are two ways of building a sustainable wardrobe. You can be like my dad, who does not think about clothing at all, and he bought something and he'll just wear it until it literally falls apart because he thinks of it as like a purely utilitarian item, which is fine. Or you can, if you care about clothing and you want to dress, you know, a certain way, then you have to start thinking about what do clothes communicate, whether they fit and flatter you, so that you're not just constantly recycled through trendy things that, you know, a magazine told you to buy.
Yeah. It's interesting how we need to think about this more, but we don't. Every time we wear the shirts of well-known football teams, Derek, or hunger after expensive sports-like shoes and queue for them in the middle of the night, you know, rather than showing the world our allegiances and aspirations, aren't we showing the world we're just conformists, that we don't have much individuality? I mean, I'm guilty. I'm not in the category I've just mentioned, but I wear clothing that I think will make me acceptable, make me a la mod rather than a denizen of the 1980s. That's a kind of survival strategy. What about people branding themselves? What do you think of that trend? Because it wasn't a trend when I was a small boy. No one wore logos on their clothing.
I think that stuff's actually fine, as long as there are certain kind of, you know, if you are passionate about a certain sports team and you're dressed, you know, in a bunch of that gear, and that's part of your identity and is meaningful to you, I think that's fine. As long as you don't read in a magazine, sports jerseys are in this year, so buy this jersey that you don't even, you know, like you may not even know the sports team, but like everyone is, you know, the celebrity wore it, so now you're supposed to go out and buy sports jerseys. To me, that's like it's just kind of a stupid way to build a wardrobe, because next year the celebrity will wear something different, and then you're going to go buy something else. It's just an endless cycle.
Be true to what you wear. Can I ask you about belts? Should you match your belt color to your shoes or to your pants?
You should match it to your shoes. That is one generally, you know, I'm always saying that fashion rules are kind of contextual to culture and all of that, and but like match your belt to your shoes is a pretty, you know, there are some exceptions, but it's a fairly good, like, as far as like universal rules go, it's a pretty good universal rule.
Can sweatpants look good in public, do you think?
I will get in trouble for this, but yes, I do. I think a lot of people think that since I write about suits, I care a lot about respectability and dress and certain kind of like middle class appearance in public. But I've seen outfits that look cool, sweatpants. You know, someone's walking their dog. I've seen guys in like sweatpants and like a Western style puffer vest, and I thought it looked great with sneakers. And they're out walking their dog in the neighborhood. I thought it looked cool and sporty. I think anything, most things, not anything, but most things can look good if styled right.
Blue on blue, a blue denim jacket with blue jeans. Can people get away with that?
Yes. I also think that can look great. If you feel uncomfortable in it, the easiest way is that if you're wearing a blue trucker jacket and you feel uncomfortable with wearing blue jeans, the easiest way is obviously to wear jeans in different colors. So black or tan jeans work well with a blue denim trucker jacket. And then if you want to verge on blue and blue and you are a little wary of like looking like you're wearing a suit, essentially a denim suit, then you just got to vary the colors. So like, let's say a very dark, kind of raw denim trucker jacket with washed blue jeans, you'll get that contrast. But again, when I think of clothing as social, you know, kind of like ways to tell stories about culture and history, I think of that like blue denim trucker jacket with blue jeans as like a very cool Midwestern American working class look. And on a certain kind of guy, with a plaid shirt and a trucker cap, I think it looks great.
Do we notice other people's fashion accoutrements, do you think, like watches? Because people set a lot of store by what watch they wear. I'm a bit of a lost cause. I don't do that or really notice if you're wearing a Rolex or whatever you wear. What do you think about fashion accoutrements like that?
I do think some people notice. I've seen that firsthand where somebody will notice a watch, but you know, I don't think you should buy a watch because you think it's going to impress people. If you enjoy watches for what they are, as kind of mechanical wonders, and someone, you know, on the street also is a watch enthusiast. I think that's a great kind of moment where two people share an interest, can, you know, kind of talk for a bit. You shouldn't buy a watch because you think the average person is going to be impressed, because most people don't notice or care about watches. And to the degree that anyone would be impressed that you're wearing an expensive watch is probably not a very good person. So, you know, but yes, yeah, some people will notice, and hopefully that person is someone who shares your hobby and love for the item and is not a weirdo who thinks you're going to be a mark for a real estate deal or something.
Entertaining to talk to you, but also very informative. As I said earlier on in the interview, you've got a great way of looking at fashion and decoding it, and also getting deep into its cultural meanings. Thank you for the chat, Derek. I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
Derek Guy, the menswear guy.